Hi, with Truth News Radio Australia, and it is the 3rd of July 2013. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another show. My name's Hereward Fenton, and today I'll be taking you through some local and international news. And in the second hour of the show, it will be my great honour to present to you an interview with Craig Isherwood, the Secretary of the Citizens Electoral Council, a political party in Australia with a very strong libertarian focus and a very strong grasp of some of the things that are going wrong with the nation. Craig has been on the show a couple of times before, and every time he comes on, it's always a really interesting kind of tour de force of economic and political and even philosophical sort of ruminations. And today he's actually coming on to talk about something quite important and quite urgent. There are appears plans afoot to bring in legislation that would allow banks to bring in a Cyprus-style arrangement whereby creditors of banks which fail would actually be liable and would potentially lose their money if it was in a bank that went down. And Craig's done some work on this. There is an article here from the Australian Financial Review which highlights some aspects of this proposed legislation. It is certainly of great concern. The possibility that bank deposits would be seized is something that is really the worst case scenario. It's the ultimate nightmare. And of course, if it really did happen on a large scale, it would facilitate the ushering in of a totally tyrannical system of governance. I mean, it would put the general population in such a state of vulnerability and weakness, and also provoke so many people to extreme behaviour of one kind or another, that governments around the world, wherever this might happen, would seem to be justified in declaring martial law, and would say, well, you know, we just have to. There's unrest, you know, there's chaos, and we're going to just have to do something about it. You know, all these banks failed, and, you know, unfortunately the money was seized, and you know, these people don't have money, and yes they're getting a little bit out of control, you know, and unfortunately we're going to have a strict curfew, and people will be shot if they violate the terms of the military laws. I mean, this is what happens. It's happened in many countries. We tend to think it's impossible that it would happen in a modern Western country. And you think, oh, well, you know, we're way beyond that. Well, you know, just wait and see. You don't really know, do you? And we've got 20/20 hindsight. We've seen things in the past that occurred that people didn't expect, that were quite disastrous. And this could be one of them around the corner again. Of course, it's very difficult to know what to do, how to fend it off. But with people like Craig Isherwood in politics and trying to do something about it, at least we have a direction. At least we have some form of focus. So I do hope you'll enjoy that interview coming up in the second hour. And I'll also be going through with Craig through the international news. I'll probably talk a bit about the whole NSA business and the whole situation with relations between the US and various other countries deteriorating markedly, and the importance of whistleblowers, which again I think is a really important topic, and I want to really reinforce that in every show that I do, really, because whistleblowers are essential to restoring democracy in our failing democracies. With more whistleblowers prepared to take significant risks, we have a chance of turning around and defeating the trend towards totalitarianism. But if we don't get more whistleblowers, and this again was what Edward Snowden himself said he feared most, if we don't get more whistleblowers coming forwards, we are essentially doomed. And there are so many people who could come forwards. There are so many people who could break rank. And this really also includes so many people in government and the media. And media being my favorite enemy, because the media has been so complicit in steering public opinion in the direction in which the powers that be want it to go. That they are, as Glenn Greenwald said in a recent interview, the media act like courtiers to power. Their function just is really to fluff up the pronouncements of those who claim to basically run this planet, the big business and their government puppets. Media does a job of making it look as if there are various perspectives and different opinions, and they often do that kind of thing where they look like they're really investigating something, but in fact they're giving you a carefully crafted portrait of what they want you to see. But of course there are forces and growing ones that are working against that, and one such force is WikiLeaks. And on the topic of WikiLeaks, of course, which is very current at the moment, having been deeply involved in the Edward Snowden saga, it's important to note that WikiLeaks has now launched a political party in Australia. And they actually have a website, wikileaksparty.org.au, and they've got a blog on there. And we've got some recent news articles regarding polling, and I've got one here from themonthly.com.au, which says, new polling shows Assange's WikiLeaks leads the new parties. And this is actually from Roy Morgan Research. The Australian electorate is considering voting for three new fringe parties, with WikiLeaks ahead of Katter's Australia Party and the Palmer United Party. A special telephone Morgan poll conducted over the last few nights, in fact this was a few weeks ago, shows that the WikiLeaks party has the largest amount of potential support, with 21% of Australian electors saying they would consider voting for Julian Assange's new party. 16% say they'd consider voting for Katter's Australian Party, and 16% for the Palmer United Party heading into this year's federal election. Australian electors were asked whether they would consider voting for each of the new political parties at this year's federal election, although the WikiLeaks party only plans to stand candidates for the Senate in New South Wales, Victoria, and Western Australia. Analysis of the results by federal voting intention shows that potential support for the new parties is highest amongst Greens supporters, of whom 44% would consider voting for WikiLeaks, 20% would consider voting for Katter's Australian Party, and 15% would consider voting for the Palmer United Party. It's interesting that 20% of Greens would consider voting for Bob Katter's Australian Party, considering that Bob Katter is not exactly an environmentalist in terms of at least the way the Greens would frame that. I know he's certainly a skeptic when it comes to climate change. I guess and I suspect that a lot of people in the Greens are secretly a bit skeptical of climate change as well. I'd love to actually investigate that at some point. But I know that a lot of people in the Greens are not stupid. In fact, one of the most vocal and brilliant climate change sceptics in Australia, Joanne Nova, was formerly a Green. And, a lot of people who were in the Greens simply joined the party because they thought, well, they do care about the environment. There are problems with the environment. They also care about human rights, and the Greens have had a track record of protecting human rights and civil liberties. And a lot of people have just said, yeah, look, that looks like a good party for me to join. A lot of them never quite understood that the Greens had somewhat been taken over or infiltrated by very, very strong socialist type tendencies, which are still, not 100% taken over, but certainly dominate a lot of the agendas of the Greens. And I think a lot of the individuals within the Greens Party who've moved up the ranks do come from that sort of background. And of course, along with that sort of philosophy comes the belief in big government, the belief in the government safety net. Now, WikiLeaks doesn't appear to have that socialist kind of agenda working within it. But of course, once they've launched as a party, I would not doubt that it would start to move in that direction, because that tends to be the way socialists work, is that they tend to move in and gravitate towards any new parties that are breaking ranks, and particularly those that appear to be advocating freedoms freedoms of expression and certain types of dissent. Although, curiously and interestingly, libertarianism as such is one which is seen as actually an anathema to socialism, whereas in fact, libertarianism really is the essence of freedom and the essence of dissent. But libertarianism is tagged among those who have a socialist left-wing kind of bent as being a capitalist tendency, a laissez-faire capitalist kind of tendency, which in their minds is all about sort of propping up a big business, propping up the power and the prestige of the people who have all the money. Of course, that does occur. And a lot of those who pay lip service to libertarianism, conservative libertarianism, are indeed of that ilk. And we must be extremely wary of that. But, you see, the same thing applies to those who pay lip service to the egalitarian principles which underlie the Labour Party and which are part of the essence of socialism. A lot of them pay lip service to that, but really what their agenda is to build, to consolidate a power base with a different type of rhetoric from the rhetoric of the more right-wing type organisations, whereas instead of talking about, private enterprise and how the rich lift everyone up by getting richer, that they talk about the nanny state, and they talk about how we need the safety net, and how the state, this great benevolent institution, has to take care of those who are weaker and has to support the poor and the disadvantaged. And of course, by playing up these themes, they get a lot of people who are kind-hearted, decent folk saying, yes, I would like to be a socialist. But I think there's a lot of manipulation that goes on both sides and both sides of politics. And I'm certainly not grafted or welded on to either side in that left-wing, right-wing debate. We're just going to break, and we'll be right back after these ads with some more news. Stay with us.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Seems to me like they want us to be afraid, man. Maybe we just like being afraid. Maybe we just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Lift, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life throwing strife into the mix to the pick.
Hi, welcome back. You with Truth News Radio. Excellent to have your company today. I do always enjoy hearing from listeners to the show. If you'd like to send me an email, you're most welcome. I'll get back to you if I'm able to. Sometimes I don't, and I do apologize for that. I'm just often quite busy, and often get quite thoughtful and detailed things sent to me, which I would love to respond to in depth. But quite often I do take some of those ideas on board and put them into new shows. So I really do appreciate it when I do get emails with any thoughts and any ideas. And if there's anyone out there who's who's interested in coming on the show, who's got some strong opinions or some expert knowledge on any subject, please do get in touch with me. I would love to have you aboard. Of course, you can find our show live if you tune into the Logos Radio Network out of Austin, Texas, which is on the FM dial there, and in a number of FM stations around the US. And, of course, you can also get the live streaming version of the show from the website at www.truthnews.com.au and just follow the links there to listen live. Now, I'm just going to continue reading here from the article outlining some Roy Morgan research into the new WikiLeaks party. Now, as I was just saying there before the break, apparently 20% of Green supporters would consider... 44% of Green supporters would consider voting for WikiLeaks, and 20% would consider voting for Katter's Australian Party. And 15% would consider voting for the Palmer United Party. I mean, that's a significant amount as well when you consider that Clive Palmer certainly made no friends among the Greens when he said that the Greens had been infiltrated or set up by the CIA. But again, you know, the Greens is a large party, and there's a lot of people in there, as I was saying before, because they thought it was a good alternative. You know, they probably looked around and saw, you know, here are the choices. You know, I'm a good-hearted person. I care about the world. I do care about the environment. I care about human rights. I hate these wars. Sure, I'll vote Green. But, you know, democracy is all about having a voice, and we need more voices. What we actually need is many more independent parties, and that's what we're getting. It's a really interesting development, and if we can hold off this frightening freight train sort of momentum towards tyranny, which would probably see all this kind of political freedom abolished, if we can hold that back, I think some of these political parties could end up doing a lot of good. I mean, imagine if we had a parliament that was really divided between these parties, instead of just like balance of power. Currently now it's like, well, yes, there's Liberal and Labor and the Greens with the balance of power. Well, you know, that's not diversity. There's no balance there. And of course the Greens just get lent on one way or the other to vote with one side or the other. It's still seen as a two-horse race. It's a two-party system. But, you know, what we really need is a multi-party system. In which case the Prime Minister would simply be pretty much a figurehead that wouldn't really be seen to be leading the country. It would simply be a functionary role of the party that had the largest number of seats. But really, the policies would be determined by votes in Parliament, and we wouldn't just see a party line. We'd actually see bills raised and then maybe shot down. You know, one party would raise a bill, another party would shoot them down. I think that would be fantastic. You know, some people say, oh, that's terrible because, you know, the government wouldn't be able to lead. No, the government, what is the government? The government is Parliament. The government is that conglomeration of representatives in a representative democracy who represent what the people want. And the people want different things. So things have to be balanced, things have to be juxtaposed, things have to be traded off in order for us all to be able to move ahead and for everyone to feel that they're being represented. To me, that's the obvious solution. I mean, is it actually, I believe the system that we currently have has the mechanism to make democracy real. And I believe that that's been achieved over 1,000 years, you know, since the Magna Carta, of bloody and painful struggle to get to have these institutions. Now, of course, the institutions are corrupted. I don't deny that. But those who say, well, that means the institutions have got to be all swept aside and something completely new is all no good, to me, that sounds again like socialism, or it sounds more like, you know, radical revolutionary socialism, which has always been saying that, you know, sweep it all aside. That's what happened in the Russian Revolution. That's what happened in the Chinese Revolution. But whenever we see that, it's what happened in the French Revolution. You know, whenever we see that happening, I almost guarantee you what comes out is worse. It's never better. Those kind of sweeping changes are a cover for an actual a devolution towards a much more primitive, much more authoritarian system of government. And there are always so many people in politics who would just love that, you know, just love to be involved in an authoritarian system and hope that they can climb their way up and weasel their way into positions of power and influence. It's the ego. It's narcissism. I mean, you can analyze a lot of this in terms of human psychology. Narcissistic, egotistical people gravitate towards totalitarian criminal systems generally because they're looking for power and prestige. People who are more mature, people who are wiser, people who have spiritually evolved, always talk about the importance of freedom, the importance of the individual, and that the only way forwards is to empower the individual, collective wisdom. It doesn't matter who you refer to in history, whether it's Gandhi or Thomas Jefferson, Albert Einstein. I mean, all these people who are great individuals who really stood out from the crowd, they have this great thing in common, is that they understand that it all comes from the individual and that freedom is the sine qua non. Freedom is the essential ingredient. And what we see now is just so many people denying that, so many people turning that back, rolling it back, lying in the most egregious way, basically saying that freedom is slavery, as George Orwell predicted. They're basically saying that we're free when in fact we're not free. That's what Obama does. Saying that we have a democracy when we don't have a democracy. Saying that there's checks and balances when there aren't checks and balances. And of course, they say that we're in a state of peace when we're in fact in a state of war. So they're saying that war is peace. And of course, they're saying you should trust the government. Trust the government, right? Don't think too much on your own. And what's that? Well, that's ignorance is strength, isn't it? That's Orwell's third dictum from 1984. Ignorance is strength. In other words, don't think too much. Just trust the government because we care about you, right? We wouldn't do anything bad. Don't think too much. And that makes you good and that makes you strong. Anyway, just continuing here from the article from themonthly.com.au. Of the major parties, up to 26% ALP supporters would consider voting for WikiLeaks, and 11% of both ALP and Liberal National Party supporters would consider voting for Qatar's Australia Party. However, more NLP supporters would consider voting for the Palmer United Party than ALP supporters. Of course, that's not surprising. Clive Palmer is a mining magnate, a billionaire, one of the richest people in the world. And, of course, we expect a lot of the right-wing, traditional paleo-conservatives to think someone like Clive Palmer is a good bloke. I think he's okay in a lot of ways. I would probably disagree with him on many things. We are going to break again, but we will be right back. Stay with us.
So unjust, children
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Welcome back. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's a great honour, as always, to be doing this show. And I do wish to stipulate that I intend to continue to do this show as long as I'm able. As long as I'm physically and mentally sound, I'll continue to do this show. I have a lot of people commending me on what I've done, and I thank you as well. I thank everyone out there who's actually doing anything to stand up for democracy, to make democracy real. Now, I'd like to continue from this article here from themonthly.com.au, which is about the new WikiLeaks party. And now, the main support base for the WikiLeaks party is in Victoria, which is the state in which Julian Assange has announced he will run for the Senate. Next is Tasmania, with 26%. Victoria has 27% support. Tasmania has 26% support. And that's followed by Queensland and South Australia with 21%, and New South Wales with 18%. Potential support for Katter's Australian party is strongest in Bob Katter's home state of Queensland with 27%. So I think it's important to keep an eye on the new political parties. And interesting to note, my good friend John Bursell, who's been on this show many times, is actually running for Katter's Australian party. And I do actually hope to get John Bursell on the show soon to talk about that whole development and what his party's platforms are, what he would basically be hoping to change if that party were to win a seat in Parliament or indeed to win government. So I'll be bringing that to you as and when I can. Now, I'd like to continue with some WikiLeaks news here. I've got a recent interview with Julian Assange, which was done on ABC News in the United States. It's quite a detailed interview, and it's got quite quite a lot of interesting observations in it by Julian Assange, and also some quite threatening hints in it from the interviewer here. As always, the media in the US has become extremely hostile towards Edward Snowden and the whole phenomenon of whistleblowers. But Julian Assange holds himself very well in this interview, so I will play a little of that for you now.
And Mr. Assange, let me begin with you. Thank you for joining us. What can you tell us about where Edward Snowden is right now and where he's expected to go?
Thank you, George. I wish I could answer these questions of yours in more detail. The situation now with Edward Snowden is a very sensitive one. It's a matter of international diplomatic negotiations. So there's little that I can productively say about what is happening directly. But look, let's pull back a bit. Why is it that Mr. Snowden is not in the United States? He should feel that he should be afforded justice in the United States. But his situation is very similar to a situation that I face and that my staff face, where we have been sucked into a grand jury in Alexandria, Virginia. That's where the charges for Mr. Snowden came from, Alexandria, Virginia. Well, what do we know about that district? It's 6 kilometres from the centre of Washington, D.C. The jury pool is made up of the CIA, Pentagon, etc. In the legal community in the United States, it's known as the rocket docket because of the lack of scrutiny procedures have there. There's a 99% chance that if you're, sorry, a 99.97% chance that if you're a target of a grand jury, you'll be indicted, and a 99% chance that if you were indicted by a grand jury, you'll be convicted. So this is not a situation, ignoring all the political rhetoric which we've seen, which has been terrible over the past 2 weeks, where Mr. Snowden can feel that he would be afforded justice.
But is there any country right now that will grant Mr. Snowden asylum?
Well, under UN conventions, Mr. Snowden has the right to apply to nearly every country for asylum. Of course, asylum decisions are always a mixture of the political and the legal. And I think there are several countries where it is politically possible for Mr. Snowden to receive asylum, and many countries, of course, where he's legally entitled to that kind of protection. No one is alleging that any of his acts are anything other than political, that he has acted in a manner to draw attention to a very serious problem in the United States, where without the will of Congress, without the will of the American population, we now have a state within a state. We have a transnational surveillance apparatus. Glenn Greenwald just last night spoke about how a new technology to be rolled out by the National Security Agency is going to attempt to intercept 1 billion mobile phone calls a day. No one signed up for this. Obama does not have a mandate for that.
With respect,
no one has
Mr.
a mandate
Assange,
for that.
Many people
Congress
have said
has been
that
taken
is,
for a ride.
Excuse me. Many people said this is far more than political, including Secretary of State John Kerry. He spoke out on this earlier this week, saying that Snowden's revelations are putting people at risk. Take a look.
People may die as a consequence of what this man did. It is possible the United States will be attacked because terrorists may now know how to protect themselves in some way or another that they didn't know before.
Does that concern you at all?
Well, look, we have heard this rhetoric. I myself was subject to precisely this rhetoric 2-3 years ago. And it all proved to be false. And we had this terrible discussion about, which even exists in some of the tabloid press today, about WikiLeaks causing harm. But not a single US government official, no one from the Pentagon, no one from any government says that any of our revelations in the past 6 years has caused anyone to come to physical harm. And the revelations by Snowden, I mean, these are even more abstract.
Have you spoken to Mr. Snowden? Are you confident he's safe right now?
Publishing. Our legal people have been in contact with Mr. Snowden. I can't say anything about the present situation, but you know, the United States cancelled his passport. Joseph Biden, the day before yesterday, personally called President Correa, trying to pressure him. That's not acceptable. Asylum is a right that we all have. It's an international right. The United States has been founded largely on accepting political refugees from other countries and has prospered by it. Mr. Snowden has that right. Ideally, he should be able to return to the United States. Unfortunately, that's not the world that we live in, and hopefully another country will give him the justice that he deserves.
Edward Snowden's father has spoken out. He fears that you and WikiLeaks are manipulating his son, and he said that, quote, "I think WikiLeaks, their focus isn't necessarily the Constitution of the United States. That's a concern for me." How do you respond to Edward Snowden's father?
Well, he didn't say that. He said might be. Mr. Snowden's father, as a parent, of course he is worried in this situation. Every father would be worried in this situation. We have established contact with Mr. Snowden's father's lawyer to put some of his concerns to rest. But I mean, this isn't a situation that, you know, that WikiLeaks is in charge of, if you like. This is a matter for states at a very, very serious level to understand and sort out and behave responsibly. Because we've had some experience in the past with publishing, with attacks and political rhetoric from the United States, with asylum and so on. And I have a personal sympathy for Mr. Snowden. We did what we could, and we'll continue to do so.
You have put yourself in the middle of this.
To try and help him through.
And I want to ask a further question on that. Glenn Greenwald has said that no matter what happens to Snowden, his secrets, the secrets that he's taken, will get out. How? And does WikiLeaks have possession of those secrets right now?
Look, there is no stopping the publishing process at this stage. Great care has been taken to make sure that Mr. Snowden can't be pressured by any state to stop the publication process.
We'll just pause it there. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. and we're going to break. I've been playing you a clip from an interview with Julian Assange talking about Edward Snowden. And I will continue with that after the break. Some interesting points are raised. Do stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back. You are listening to Truth News Radio Australia, broadcasting to you on the internet ether across the planet and into the known universe. I hope you'll stay with us today for the entire 2 hours, because in the second hour I have a really important interview coming up with Craig Isherwood, Secretary of the Citizens Electoral Council in Australia, and he's going to be talking about some quite disturbing developments in financial legislation area, and this is a situation that could allow banks to basically seize funds, similar to what happened in Cyprus, in the event that banks should fail. And Craig Isherwood and his party have been really on this quite intensely, and they've written some papers about it. And Craig is going to spend the full hour with me talking about this and other important issues of the day. But I do encourage you to stay for that. It'll be an extremely stimulating hour. Now, I've been playing you here a clip from an interview with Julian Assange, and I'd like to continue with that. Some interesting points are raised, and the interviewer actually makes some quotes at a certain point during the interview, which appear to be completely out of context or completely false in terms of what Julian Assange has previously said. And I think it's very illustrative of the way the media works, and I think Julian handles it very well, because he basically just shoots it down and says, well, that's not true. But it made me really think about it when I heard that, because so often things are attributed to people in the media, statements are attributed to people. And because of the power of the media, because of the presence, because of the prestige, we tend to give it credibility. Even when we know the media can't be trusted, we still think, well, you know, it's a direct quote, it must be true. I'll play this for you and perhaps mention it as we go through. So I'm just continuing here now with the interview on ABC News with Julian Assange from a few days ago.
The United States, by cancelling his passport, has left him for the moment marooned in Russia. Is that really a great outcome by the State Department? Is that really what it wanted to do? I think that's every citizen has the right to their citizenship, to take someone's principal component of citizenship, their passport, away from them is a disgrace. Mr. Snowden hasn't been convicted of anything. There are no international warrants out for his arrest. To take a passport from a young man in a difficult situation like that is a disgrace. He is a hero. He has told the people of the world and the United States that there is mass, unlawful interception of their communications, far beyond anything that happened under Nixon. Obama can't just turn around like Nixon did and said, it's okay if the president does it, if the president authorizes
it. That's not what he's saying, but sir, he has also broken the law. And let me bring that now to Jocelyn Radek, who's also here with me right now. Julian Assange mentioned Edward Snowden's father, who's also written, his attorney has written a letter to Eric Holder, the attorney general, saying that he believes that his son would be willing to come back to the United States if he would not be detained or imprisoned prior to trial, if he would not be subject to a gag order, if he would be tried in the venue of his choosing. Do you think it would make sense for Snowden to return under those circumstances?
I actually don't. I have represented people like Thomas Drake, who was an NSA whistleblower, who actually did go through every conceivable internal channel possible, including his boss, the Inspector General of his agency, the Defense Department Inspector General, and two congressional committees, and the U.S. turned around and prosecuted him, and did so for espionage, and threatened to tie him up for the rest of his life in jail. I think Snowden's outlook is bleak here, and instead of focusing on Snowden and shooting the messenger, we should really focus on the crimes of the NSA, because whatever laws Snowden may or may not have broken, they are infinitesimally small compared to the two major surveillance laws and the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution that NSA has violated.
But these surveillance programs, as the president has pointed out, were passed by the Congress or overseen by a court.
Well, both of those are incorrect. Congress has not been fully informed. Only
they have passed the laws. There is oversight. There is
intelligence.
Okay,
but there's
oversight.
A secret interpretation of Section 215 of the Patriot Act, which nobody knows except for the intel committee of Congress, and even they say that they think most Americans would be appalled by that. And to say that it's been approved by the courts is a misnomer, because it gives the impression that federal courts have approved this, when in reality, it's the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, which has rubber-stamped
every
single—
Which is a federal court.
No, it is a secret court set up at the Justice Department that has federal judges on it, but last year, it approved 2,000 out of 2,000 applications. They hear only the government side, and they've rejected an application one time since 1978.
Let me bring this back to Julian Assange. You know, back in 2010, an email that was revealed from you by Bart Gellman in Time magazine said that you hoped the revelations from WikiLeaks would bring about, quote, the total annihilation of the current U.S. regime. Is that still your goal, and what did you mean by that?
I didn't say that, and there is no such email.
It was quoted in Time magazine in December 2010.
Time magazine. But this is it's very interesting that you raise such a thing like that. You know, we are in a situation where we have these extraordinary revelations that are causing great embarrassment to a new national security state that is arising in the U.S. It's not just the U.S. Similar national security states are rising in other countries. But it is trying to evade democratic will. It's treating Congress like a bunch of fools. And we saw Clapper up there lying, bald-faced lying to Congress. We have secret interpretations of the law. What does the law mean if there's secret interpretations and secret courts? We have Bradley Manning's trial continuing tomorrow. A young man, a good man, as far as anyone can tell. Motivations are entirely political, as far as anyone argues. Same with Snowden. Being put through this meat grinder where a new precedent is trying to be set, which is communicating with the press, is committing espionage. And it's not just a precedent that's been trying to be set on these whistleblowers. It's a precedent that's trying to be set on journalists and publishers as well.
Meantime,
we saw that
Mr. Assange, meantime, you're being
James Rosen
safe harbor by the Ecuadorian government. That the Korea administration has been admonished by human rights organizations for restricting press freedoms, prosecuting journalists. The Inter-American Press Association calls its new media law, quote, the most serious setback for freedom of the press in the recent history of Latin America. So does it make you uncomfortable to be harbored by a government that goes after journalists? And do you see a double standard there?
Well, these accusations are largely blown up. There are, of course, all sorts of problems in any particular country. But why are they being spoken about? What has happened here is a mass revelation of illegal transnational spying by the National Security Agency, the collection of the communications records of every single person in the United States, laying out the entire community structure of the United States. And these sort of attempts are merely a mechanism to try and shift ground. But, you know, go to CPJ, Committee to Protect Journalists in New York. It lists the number of journalists in Ecuadorian prisons, zero. And it has been zero for a very long time.
I'll just leave it there. I think it's interesting to note there the accusation that was made that that Julian Assange had said that he was looking for the annihilation of the U.S. regime. And of course, the ABC News interviewer there said, well, that was published in Time magazine. And this is the point I was making earlier, is that these very, very powerful media organizations like Time magazine have an incredible sway over people. And of course, it reminds me a little of famous misquotes, for example, of the president of Iran, Ahmadinejad, who was accused of saying that they wanted to wipe Israel off the map, when in fact, it was a misquote and was out of context. But once the media has seized on to one of these little sound bites, it just becomes an incredibly powerful way of completely dismissing an individual. I mean, the power of that is just incredible. But look, on the bright side, I think it's really interesting and really, really incredible that this man, Julian Assange, who is such a thorn in the side of the US government, is actually running for the Senate in our country, in Australia. And with the amount of support that he has, there's a very strong probability he will win a seat. And that is just an incredible turn of events in a situation where the man is still, seeking asylum in a building surrounded by police, wanted because of his whistleblowing activities, really, under the cover of very, very trumped up and ridiculous sexual misconduct allegations, but really wanted for his championing of whistleblowers. I mean, it's probably not correct to say Julian Assange is himself a whistleblower. No, he's a journalist, an unusual journalist, a new generation type of journalist, more of an IT specialist / geek journalist, but someone who has helped people get information out. And he certainly is a massive enemy now of the US, but a great supporter of truth and a great friend to humanity. And the possibility that we would have a political party with him at the head of it in Australia and an actual voice in government is really quite incredible. I think it's going to create incredible ripples in the whole fabric of the sort of the world of politics. I think things are changing, folks. That's my general sense of the situation. We're moving into perhaps a less stable situation, more volatile. That can mean good and it can mean bad. The dangers, of course, are the knee-jerk reactions and the plans that are always there just under the... just behind your vision, plans of those who want to bring in some sort of jacked up totalitarian state on steroids. Well, we are going to break, and we'll be back in the second hour with Craig Isherwood. It'll be a great hour. Stay with us.